Guess we can go ahead and start. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, thank you for our Texas. Thank you for all your blessings upon us to where things are so good for us here. Thank you that we get to go to church wherever it seems best, and that there's no rules from the government that we must or must not go to church or not, or have our church be a certain way or not. Thank you for that very high degree of freedom of religion that we're enjoying here. Thank you for how we can educate ourselves and our sons and daughters how seems best to us, and how you're helping us to do that, so that we can teach the fear of the Lord along with the school subjects. And then thank you for all your other blessings also. We ask that you will help our governor and all of the other officials in the government so that they will do what's right and good for us to secure our rights. We ask your blessing on this class today so that we can learn our history and better understand your providence and our duty. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen. Psalm 118. Psalm 118. Verses 8 and 9, since there are two verses, would you two young ladies please read us those aloud, Ava first and then Audrey. Psalm 118, verses 8 and 9, please.
It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man.
It is better to trust in the Lord than to have confidence in princes.
Amen. Do you suppose that observation would ring true with the Texians from the 1830s, that you could have confidence in God, but not necessarily confidence in Santa Anna or anybody else? Okay, la prueba, the quiz, ready? Okay, and there is no ice cream involved. Sorry, that was a false alarm there. On November 3rd, 1835, where was the third consultation held? I don't mean what building, of course, whose home, I mean what town. November 3rd, 1835, the third consultation, where was it? At the third consultation, there were some people saying that should be a resolution for independence, others saying not yet. So did the Texians resolve for independence at the third consultation, November 1835? Did the Texians declare independence? At that consultation, a provisional government was established. Henry Smith was appointed to office. What office? Henry Smith, to what office in the provisional government was Henry Smith appointed by the third consultation? Santa Anna, not having taken kindly to General Cost having been thrown out of Bihar, he was assembling an army to invade Texas in 1836. Was that army he was assembling relatively small and poorly supported, or relatively large and well supported? Santa Anna assembled an army to invade Texas in 1836. Was that army relatively small and poorly supported, or relatively large and well supported? One more question. During the winter of 1835 to 36, you know, November, December, January, February, were the Texians' military preparations generally confused and lethargic, or orderly and energetic? Were the Texians' military preparations that winter generally confused and lethargic, or orderly and energetic? All right, let's check ourselves. Where was the third consultation held? Did the Texians resolve for independence at that time?
No.
No. And to what office was Henry Smith appointed?
Governor
of Texas, yes. Santa Anna's army to invade in 1836, relatively large and well supported. 6,000 troops in a place and time where the Texians were mustering in the hundreds.
Which nowadays that seems like a small army.
Yeah, if there was an army of 6,000 in World War II in Europe, you know, it'd be, yeah. All right. Now, the two words confused and lethargic, I lifted both from your chapter. The Texians' military preparations were generally confused and lethargic rather than orderly and energetic that winter. Okay, for next time, the next chapter in the Henderson-Yochum, Volume 2, Chapter 3, I have copied the link on Google Books, and so if you look at it on the sermon audio page, you can see it, or if you've already found the place, you can probably find it yourself. Study your class notes from today and study your timeline for next time. So, your Texas history timeline. It's been a long time since we were together. How about this? Starting with the oldest, I'll let you tell the last one. The next oldest will tell the next to last one, etc. Who's the oldest?
Basically going backwards.
Yes. Are you the oldest? All right. Let's hear the most recent one.
1835, third Texan consultation is held at San Felipe. Story.
Okay, now, did I already give you the one about the one after that? 1835, okay. Did you work on that one already, or maybe you didn't have that one in your notes yet?
Oh, yeah, I did.
All right, so let's hear it.
1835, the Mexican army surrenders to the Texan army at Bihar, December 10th.
Close. Here, read us that so we hear it word for word.
The Mexican army surrenders Bihar to the Texians, December 10th, 1835.
Who's second oldest? All right, let's hear the one before that.
1835, third Texas consultation based in San Felipe.
There's a little more.
November 3rd.
Oh. Bueno. Okay. Who's the next oldest?
All right. 1835. War between Texas and Mexico begins with the Battle of Gonzales.
And a little more.
October 3rd.
Oh! No! So close. What would you all say about that? October 2nd.
One day.
No.
Okay, so let's say the whole thing again so we get it exactly right.
1835, war between Texas and Mexico begins at Battle of Gonzales, October 2nd.
Almost begins. You said it right the first time. Begins not at, but begins
with.
All right, so say it again so we hear the thing, so we hear it perfectly.
1835, war between Texas and Mexico begins with the Battle of Gonzales, October 2nd.
Are you the next oldest?
I'm not. He hasn't had the time.
All right. So we'll give you your beating later. we were picking out a plank earlier, but it had splinters, so we have to pick out a smoother one later. All right, Ava. What do you got for us?
1835. Stephen F. Austin returns to Texas in September.
Okay. And now we'll do it in backward age order. You can give us the next one, and we'll go back up the line, okay?
Let's see. 1834, Stephen F. Austin was arrested and imprisoned in Mexico City.
Okay. Who's just older than... Are you the next one up the line in age order? All right, let's hear it.
1833... Second Texian consultation of statehood for Texas and sends Austin as its delegate to Mexico City.
So speaking of next oldest, did you just have a birthday?
Yesterday.
Well, I hope you had a happy birthday. I guess you got a baby. You got a baby for your birthday.
Yes, I did.
So you are now 14. Ooh, congratulations. All right, let's hear it then.
1833, Santa Anna becomes president of Mexico under the 1824 Constitution.
Nice.
1832, Santa Anna restores constitutionally elected President Pedraza.
Perfecto. Okay, so you get to do another one and back down.
Oh.
You know what, friends? We spent enough time on that, and I know you've got the ones before that. So we'll call that good for now. Congratulations. All right, ladles and jelly spoons. What? Oh, yes. Thank you. I was forgetting that. I want to add two things to your timeline. 1835, where we've got Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd. I want to add a little more to that item. 1835, Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd, appoints Sam Houston Commander-in-Chief of the Army. That's important, and I should have included it long ago. Here's it written out, the underlined part, in case you want to see that. So on your 1835, Third Texas Consultation meets at San Felipe, November 3rd, appoints Sam Houston Commander-in-Chief of the Army. Then, another item, 1836, on January 7th, Stephen F. Austin and Sam Houston both write that Texas must declare independence. 1836, on January 7th, Stephen F. Austin and Sam Houston both write that Texas must declare independence. Stephen F. Austin and Sam Houston both write that Texas must declare independence. We'll get to that in the lesson in a minute. You probably remember reading about that. So the third Texas consultation met at what town? In what year? In what month?
November.
Right.
On the third.
And whom did they appoint commander in chief of the army? Right. So we're taking up in the next month, December 1836. Nope, 1835. December 1835. General Houston, Commander-in-Chief, worked toward organizing and supplying the army. You know, he was appointed Commander-in-Chief of an army that, in effect, didn't exist. You know, a lot of volunteers had come down and met up at Goliad and gone over and driven the Mexicans out of Bihar. But, you know, there wasn't really an army and it had no supply system. General Houston chose a quartermaster general. Quartermaster is a kind of army officer who's in charge of supplying the army. He sent the quartermaster general to New Orleans, you know, the nearest place where there was anything. You know, basically nowhere in Texas were there supplies to be had for an army. Sent him to New Orleans. Appointed an assistant quartermaster general and posted him at Velasco on the coast. And ordered that supply depots be established at Capano and Matagorda so that as the supplies came in and as troops were recruited, when they started to advance south, there would be supplies for them. And what river is it that you cross to go from Louisiana into Texas? The Sabine, right. And so General Houston appointed another assistant quartermaster general to Gaines Ferry, where most of the traffic across the Sabine was at that time, so that supplies coming in by land could be handled and volunteers coming in by land could be supplied. And General Houston appointed three prominent Texians to recruit soldiers and to command them once they were inducted into the army at three of the main towns. And these men all ended up taking important parts in the war and all ended up dying in the war. He appointed James Neal to recruit and command at Bihar, which we usually call San Antonio. Mm-hmm.
James
Neal, N-E-I-L-L. And William Travis there at San Felipe, where the third consultation was held, right? Was serving kind of as an unofficial capital of Texas at the time. That was the main town in whose settlement? In whose colony?
Austin
Colony, right. And at Velasco, J.W. Fannin, James Fannin. Here we sit today in Fannin County. Right across the street, the Fannin County Courthouse. And isn't one of those statues a statue of him?
Who was appointed for Bihar?
James Neal.
Who was J.W. Fannin?
James W. Fannin, appointed to recruit and command at Velasco. V-E-L-A-S-C-O, Velasco.
And that's who Fannin County is named after?
Right.
Who was also appointed for San Felipe?
William Travis, later famous as the commander of troops at
the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. Remember the Alamo. We're getting toward the Alamo. We're getting real close.
You kind of feel it brewing.
Yes, exactly.
It's nothing that they're doing.
Now, General Houston made an order that all volunteers for the Army should report to the town of Capano and remain there until orders came from him.
Volunteers?
Yes. All volunteers should go to Capano and remain there awaiting orders from him. A lot of stuff other than that happened, and so that's part of why I'm mentioning that. He was appointed commander-in-chief by the consultation. Everyone taking up arms in Texas should rightly have fallen under his command. And so he ordered that general command to all volunteers. But a lot of people did other things besides that. Now, this is near the end of December, December 30th. Now, while he was ordering that, something else entirely was going on among the volunteers that had been at Bihar or San Antonio. There was a person named Dr. Grant who was agitating for a military expedition to Matamoros, just over the river into Mexico. And at the time, a small military garrison was there, a larger Mexican army gathered there before long. He had the idea that they could go and attack that closest city in Mexico and capture it with no trouble, and that a lot of the Mexicans would join them. And so,
the city was Matamoros?
Matamoros, mm-hmm. I got to go with some, when I was in ninth grade, and again when I was in 10th grade, on spring break, I got to go with some friends, as a guest of a friend's family, down to enjoy time at South Padre Island and Port Isabel, and we went across into Mexico, and we're at Matamoros. And the first time we just went just across the border to look around, and that was the first time I was ever experienced somebody begging. There were people begging all over the place, and there was every possible touristy thing for sale. And we really did not have an enjoyable experience at all there. Yes. The next year, my friend's dad had planned a little better, and we drove farther from the border, got away from all the right at the border stuff, and went farther into Matamoros and enjoyed a really nice time looking around past the touristy things. So it's just over into Mexico. And so Dr. Grant was agitating for such an exposition.
Yeah. Is he like a medical doctor?
Well, now, I don't know. Out of the 300 who were still at Bihar, you know, there had been several hundred, you know, during the actual siege and capture of it. They were down to about 300. A Colonel Johnson led 200 away on the exposition to go to capture Matamoros. This was not under commands from General Houston. And what? And our textbook says that they took away most of the supplies, too.
They took the blankets off the sick people.
Including taking the blankets off the sick. That's what was recorded in our book, wasn't it? Yep. And, you know, winter's not real harsh in Texas, especially down at San Antonio. But, I mean, December and January, you at least need a blanket. And so there's what's going on in December. General Houston has been appointing people, dispatching them to various places, getting things organized, mainly for the induction of recruits into the army and for their supply and for the command of them at various posts. Meanwhile, Dr. Grant and Colonel Johnson are heading up an exposition, not under his orders, to try to go to Matamoros.
Did Houston know all this was happening?
Not yet. Not at the time. He found out about it a little later.
After all the bats have happened.
Okay, so we are now finally passing into 1836. 1835 was a busy year in Texas. A lot happened, right? It was good we learned about some of it. So let's put ourselves now in 1836. Pretty soon, this is 2022 right now, right? 14 more years and this will be 200 years ago. So not quite 200 years ago. War of 1812 had already happened. Who was president of the United States of America in 1836? My brain's trying to tell me. President. No, I just don't know.
That didn't have anything to do with the time that the Monroe doctor did it. Maybe that was before.
This is after that, I guess. Oh, I should have thought ahead about that. I don't know. All right, so January 1836. The governor, whose name was?
Henry Smith.
Ordered General Houston. This is an extremely important point. Let's stop and take note of it. The civilian governor gives orders to the highest ranking military officer. That's how it's supposed to be. Your highest ranking executive in your civilian government gives the orders to the highest ranking military officers. Not the other way around. The civilian government orders the military.
And the commander in chief is the highest rank?
Right. In our system, the president of the United States is the commander in chief of all of our military forces. There's a civilian military commander who gives the orders to all the military officers. The governor ordered General Houston to make the army ready to commence active operations by the earliest day possible. Soon as possible. Start waging war to keep the Mexicans out of Texas. Keep the Mexican military out of Texas. And General Houston issued that general order to all the troops. Get ready for active operations as soon as possible.
Active operations?
Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, so far, they were only recruiting people and gathering supplies and organizing. There was a development in Mexico that the Texians didn't know about right away, of course. And it was that the party in Mexico that was still trying to get the government to go back and operate by their excellent constitution of 1824, had joined with Santa Anna in being in favor of subduing Texas. Or they had joined with him against Texas. And the Texans didn't know that right away, but as they found out about it in early January, it led them to the conclusion that, oh, well, if that's how it's going to be, there's no way we can have a peaceful state of existence within Mexico anymore. And so it so happened that it was the same day, January 7th, that our two most influential Texians wrote to others, making their opinion on that subject known in writing. Stephen F. Austin actually wrote to Sam Houston. When he learned that the federal party had joined with Santa Anna against Texas, he wrote, and this is just an excerpt from his letter, "This, of course, leaves us no remedy but one, which is an immediate declaration of independence." You know how Stephen F. Austin, of all people, had held out the longest trying to have a peaceful settlement where Texas could remain in Mexico. Sam Houston, the same day, wrote a letter saying, among other things, quote, "I now feel confident that no further experiment need be made to convince us that there is but one course left for Texas to pursue, and that is an unequivocal declaration of independence and the formation of a constitution to be submitted to the people for their rejection or ratification." You can tell it's important to our author, and I think it should be important to us, to understand that the pioneers in Texas did not come into Texas waving a flag of, let's get independent from Mexico. You know, a lot of things went by that the Texians endured and that they fought for and labored for, all the while saying, if the central government, if the federal government will just remain federal and remain true to its constitution and just secure our rights, then, you know, we'll be faithful, loyal citizens of Mexico. But it was only after the government repeatedly rejected all of their petitions for redress of grievances and it became clear that no adherence to the Constitution was going to be insisted on by the rest of the country, that they finally decided on independence. Now, there was a conflict, as you read about in chapter 2, between the two, between the council and the governor. Provisional government established by the third consultation established a governor and a council of 12 people made up of the representatives from the various settlements. The council was for the Matamoros expedition, for sending an army to Matamoros, to attack Matamoros, on the promise that the Mexicans will join with them and there'll be this great combined Mexican and Texian force for upholding the Constitution. And the council was for that, and the governor would not be for that. So the council, without the consent of the governor, appointed James Fannin to prepare for and conduct the attack on Matamoros. If you recall, Fannin was appointed by General Houston to recruit troops and take command of them at Velasco. The council appointed Fannin to prepare for and conduct this attack on Matamoros. I don't know to what degree Fannin understood or didn't understand that these were issues that were not in harmony with the commander-in-chief. I don't know what all he understood or didn't. So in January, on January 8th, Colonel Fannin issued a proclamation calling upon volunteers from all over, from Bihar, Goliad, Velasco, and elsewhere. Our author makes this statement about the state of that invasion of Matamoros. He says the supply situation for an invasion of Matamoros was hopeless. It was madness to persevere in that expedition. Now, you know, a little bit of a spoiler. The expedition never actually happened, but the preparations for it were underway there at Velasco under Colonel James Fannin.
Are they planning on getting their supplies from an Irish settlement or something that was very poor or something?
Yeah, that's right. On the 8th, Governor Smith issued an official written opposition to the council. The council considered it, and on the 11th, they responded repudiating the governor, saying that he should his office should be dissolved or something like that. Neither the council nor the governor ever officially relented to the other in this conflict. You know, it wasn't very long before the meeting where they declared independence and formed a government and everything. So this didn't go on forever. But during January and February, the end of December, January and February, it was very much a very difficult political struggle between the governor and the council. Now, of course, that kind of thing is exceedingly common in human affairs throughout time and at present. Men who are in positions of authority in the government, they strive with each other, argue with each other, someone or other, or everybody does things that are unconstitutional or illegal. Sometimes there's some virtuous, God-fearing person who really adheres to the Constitution and the law, and he or they are set against those who don't. Much more common in human affairs is where almost everybody is not adhering to the Constitution and the laws and just trying to get things their own way. So it's no surprise, if you have read the Bible, no surprise that the people appointed for a government, you know, immediately there was severe conflict between them. Okay, we have made it to January 11th. Now, remember there were commissioners sent to the U.S. to try to secure supplies for the army and more than anything to get money. And it had to be in the form of loans. And on January 11th, the commissioners to the U.S. had a loan approved in the U.S., $200,000. Which is a lot of money today if you're like talking about, you know, amount for one family or one, you know, school or something. But back then, you know, was an enormous amount of money, something probably equating to more like $2 billion now or something like that. An enormous amount, 10% delivered in cash to be taken to Texas and used for whatever, or taken to New Orleans and buy supplies with.
How many thousand?
$200,000.
I might have misunderstood, but did it say they also got another $50,000 loan from somewhere else?
Yes, that's a week later.
Okay, sorry.
Speaking of a week later, almost a week later, January 17th. General Houston's opinion on San Antonio, or Bihar, where the Alamo is, was that it could not successfully be defended against an army of any size that approached it. The Texians had demonstrated that already. You know, there was a large army with a number of pieces of artillery and a lot of horses and everything under General Koss, and they could not defend that place from even just the 1,000 Texas volunteers that attacked it. If you learn a little military history, you realize that, you know, having some sort of fortifications and defending against attack from a fort sounds like a really great idea and then ends up often being a very difficult thing to accomplish. So General Houston decided that they could not successfully defend that place. And so he sent Colonel Bowie, James Bowie, famous for the Bowie knife and other things, down to Bihar with a letter to Colonel Neal, who was in command there. Remember, General Houston had sent officers to take charge at some of the major places to recruit volunteers and command them, Colonel Neal at Bihar or San Antonio, and instructed him to remove the artillery, the cannons, because we wanted them, needed them, and to destroy the fortifications. You know, under General Koss, the Mexicans had fortified the place quite a bit, and then under Colonel Neal, they had done a lot of rebuilding and improving the fortifications. Well, General Houston, from his experience and understanding, knew that even with that, this could not be held, and so we're not going to get everybody killed there. We're not going to lose all those cannons. We want the people and the cannons removed from there. So then, We don't want the Mexicans to move in there and get to enjoy all of our fortifications that we did. So we want the cannons removed so we can use them somewhere else. We want the fortifications destroyed so they won't be useful to the enemy. So that's what was ordered. However, the artillery could not be removed without the use of horses or oxen or mules. Right. Which they didn't have. And so then, you know, this is not phone call or walkie-talkies or text message. You know, this is lengthy travel for messenger on horses. So Colonel Neal can't just say, "Ah, oh, Sam, can't do that. What do you want me to do?" You know, so he had to decide how to interpret his orders. He couldn't do them as they were issued. So since he can't take away the artillery, he decides, okay, well, then the people aren't going to leave either. And if the people in the artillery are still going to be here, then we'll keep the fortifications up also. So basically, he did not obey General Houston's orders to withdraw from San Antonio de Bihar. Not apparently from lack of desire to do so, but I cannot follow those orders.
Why didn't Sam Houston know that? I
don't know. I don't know. I can tell you in general, it's a very big area with very slow communications. You know, we're used to really fast communications. The idea of somebody not having heard from somewhere else, and if you want to know anything from there, you have to find somebody who can go. They have to travel by horseback several days, be there a few days, travel by horseback back several days, you know, that kind of. So I guess the general answer to your question is very slow communications in a very big area. You understand from what you already know about the Alamo why that exchange January 17th and following is so important. General Houston ordered that force to remove from there, and they couldn't. That was the essence of the situation. General Houston by this time is getting a lot of reports and starting to understand what's going on with the Matamoros expedition. And it's causing a lot of confusion everywhere in the military preparations. He wrote a letter about that to Governor Smith. Colonel Neal there at Bihar had about 80 men. Governor Smith is at San Felipe. I forget where Sam Houston was by this time, but he was no longer back at San Felipe. Governor Smith heard the news that the San Antonio, the Bihar force, could not withdraw with their artillery and was, in effect, you know, kind of stuck there unless they were just going to lose all their cannons. He sent Colonel Travis with a few men down to help reinforce Bihar. Our author says that was a bad move. Colonel Travis, you know, had been appointed to be there at San Felipe, recruiting and training for the new army. So the governor is there at San Felipe. Colonel Travis is there at San Felipe. And the governor sends Travis and the few men that he has away from there down to Bihar.
He did have authority to do that, right?
I don't think so. He had authority to command that to the commander-in-chief, but I don't think he really had authority. It wasn't proper for him to order around the lower officers, messing up the commander-in-chief's appointments. So that's how Colonel William Travis ended up at San Antonio Bihar. That's how Neal and Travis ended up at Bihar. And that's how they ended up there with only a small force. Colonel Travis, once there, and in command, you know, he was slightly senior to Colonel Neal and Colonel Bowie. He took command and he sent word back to the governor. We need at least 500 troops of regulars, not just volunteers, to be able to defend this position. So a lot is going on here that is not General Houston's will or orders.
Pretty much nothing like that.
I think that it comes down in popular Texas history mythology that General Houston ordered the Alamo to be defended to the last man or something like that. His orders actually were for it to be evacuated. But the orders that he gave, were not practical in one respect. And so then it was slightly but insufficiently fortified so that it was not, General Houston ordering the Alamo defended like that. Yes, Miss?
Travis said that we need 500 men.
Mm-hmm.
Did people actually start sending those people there, or was that just if we could have this, we could?
I'm not sure. I know that more volunteers arrived after that. There certainly was not a force of 500 regulars sent. We've made it to January 18th, and another loan. Only $50,000 this time, but all in cash. And so our author praises the memory of a person named William Christie, who lived at New Orleans. And apparently he was the main person who arranged for that. And our author said, William Christie, to whom above all other men out of Texas is she indebted for the favorable prosecution of the War of Independence. Not that the author is saying that he was more important than the actual men who actually fought for the independence, but from outside of Texas, the person above all others to whom we owe our success in it, William Christie.
Christie.
C-H-R-I-S-T, Christ, Christie. Well, the Y is on the end. C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, Christie. I think Christie is how, well, Corpus Christi means body of Christ, right?
What is it, an I?
That would be an I.
And the I. And what does the I ending on that in Latin do? Does it make
possessive
of or belonging to?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the name Christie historically is of Christ or belonging to Christ or something like that. Now, near the end of January, I have this down under January 21st, Colonel Johnson, who had led the volunteers away from Bihar, got with General Houston, and they discussed the thing about the way the council was giving military powers to other people, including especially Colonel James Fannin. And so General Houston was finally, being told about what exactly was going on and what the problem was there. Interesting commentary on the situation. There was a man who had a ship full of supplies. John Wharton, W-H-A-R-T-O-N, John Wharton, who had set out from New Orleans, arrived at Velasco with a ship full of provisions for the army. And he was ordered one place by Fannin and ordered somewhere else by Houston. And so here he was in possession of these contradictory orders. And so he wrote to Houston that he wasn't going to go to either place, but was just going to wait. I shall await with the provisions at Matagorda. I do this because I believe that to execute your previous orders and to proceed to Capano would not meet your present wishes. I enclose an original copy of Colonel Fannin's orders for them. I perceive that there are more commanders-in-chief than one.
That was quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm.
So there's one example of the kind of things that are going on that created a very confused situation in the military preparations. Here's a man with a ship full of supplies for the army. And at present, they're not being delivered anywhere because of the contradictory orders of where they're supposed to be delivered. We have made it, friends, if you can believe it, to February 1836. And here we have the Empire Strikes Back. February 1st, General Urrea, U-R-R-E-A, arrived with his force at Matamoros. Same day, February 1st, Santa Anna was with his force of 6,000 men at Saltillo, which is still in Mexico, but he left headed for Texas on February 1st with 6,000 men and a very large baggage train. Beasts of burden, wagons, assembled at great expense from all over Mexico. And the Texians were not ready. Theoretically, they could have been at their highest possible state of readiness had the conflict not developed between the governor and the council, had Dr. Grant and Colonel Johnson not headed off trying to get an expedition for Matamoros, had Colonel Fannin not been confused by the orders from the council and the whatever, had the supplies not been held up, you know, by where do we take them, the Texians could have been in a much better state of readiness to defend against this invasion. The Mexicans had got themselves very, very ready. The Texians had not. Okay? Here's the way the author puts it. Texans did not respond quickly and effectively to the invasion, partly due to the confusion caused by the government's conflicting commissions to Sam Houston and James Fannin. Our author's evaluation of how the governor and the council had done, this is a quote from Henderson Yochum. The most important duties of the governor and the council were to provide ways and means for the support of the army. Had they attended more to these instead of interfering with the command and movement of the army, the country would perhaps have suffered less and had and not been witness to fields of slaughter. So you might know what's coming from previous learning, but you know, a little bit of a spoiler: the fact that the Texians are not ready to repel this invasion means that the Mexican army is going to proceed and are going to be able to defeat and kill the small, poorly organized Texas military forces, and they are going to send thousands of the Texas settlers fleeing, who will suffer cruelly in the bad weather as they try to flee from Santa Anna's army. Okay, so when we get together next, which hopefully will be just 1 week from today, although last time we thought that it ended up being a long time. Yeah. I've got here a chart showing the events leading up to the Siege of the Alamo, which then, during part of them, run concurrently with the next consultation where the Texians will tune in next week to hear the Texians say.
I haven't said that in a long time.